4:30 in the afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by TSN analyst, NHL Network analyst, and RDS analyst Marty Biron to talk about goaltending. Marty, how do you have the time to come on the show and talk goaltending with us?
You know what? I'm in between cooking and running to the mall and doing all these things, so I welcome the break and talk hockey. I enjoy it.
Well, we appreciate you making time for us, Marty. A happy Thanksgiving a couple days ago. I'm sure you had a nice celebration with the family, no doubt. Obviously, Marty, goaltending, a big topic of conversation here in Winnipeg with Andre Pavlik going out with an injury. Connor Hellebuck making his NHL debut last night in victory over the Minnesota Wild. You know, we're now debating whether or not he should start on a back-to-back situation. I want to ask you sort of in the macro sense of the word, you know, if you're a goaltender, a rookie goaltender, and you're coming into the NHL and you won your first game yesterday, do you want to go back in and play back-to-back? Do you want to jump right in and keep the momentum going? Are you okay with sort of sitting back and evaluating the game from the bench again to sort of keep your bearings about you throughout the start of your season?
The way the young goalies want to go is they think that they, even though you read all the quotes, but I remember my first few training camps and then my first few games in the National Hockey League, and I'm like, I'm the best goalie there is. I should be playing every game. I mean, that's just, I was the best goalie there was in juniors, and then everybody kept telling me I'm the best, and then I'm the best in the American League, and then it's like, come on, let's go. I want to get going, so let me play. But the thing that's hard is it's hard to evaluate a young, inexperienced goalie in his first few NHL games because a lot more is riding on adrenaline and on just feel as opposed to the structure and the technical balance of the game. So to me, I watched Hellebuck's game the other night and I'm like, oh, you did great, you know, and didn't overdo too much, felt really comfortable. Obviously, the butterflies are there, so you're going to there was a few rebounds that are coming way out, like shots hitting them right in the chest, and the rebounds are coming in right out. So I'm thinking nerves, obviously, but a lot of times you need to see those goalies play 3, 4, 5 games before you can really evaluate where they're at or the development's at. So I don't expect that he would go back-to-back, but I think in his mind he's like, hey, I'm ready to go. In the American League, sometimes you play 3-3, so it's not like you're tired. You're ready to get it going.
Marty, we wanted to ask you about a guy that you've seen play a lot, and that's Carey Price in Montreal. And he comes back from injury, plays in 3 games, but then he has to leave the game against your former team, the New York Rangers. Do you think Carey Price was rushed back into the lineup? What was your read on that? And obviously a very unfortunate injury for a guy who had already missed a big chunk of the first part of the season.
No, I don't think he was rushed back. I think if he'd gotten hurt in the first game or even maybe the early part of the second game, and maybe that was the first time that he stretched his legs out and you're like, hey, you know, and he gets hurt, you're like, hey, this guy wasn't ready to come back. But I do believe that he was ready. He felt 100%, that the trainers believed that he was 100%. And as a goalie, as an athlete as well in general, you're never 100%. There's always something that's bothering you. There's always a little aches and pains here and there. But I do think it's alarming because now, you know, my first initial reaction was the right knee. The knee that he got hurt when Chris Kreider hit him 2 years ago in the playoffs, possibly the knee that was hurt in the first time around. And now I'm like, oh, this is pretty alarming because if there's something structurally not good in the knee, and they were just trying to get some treatment to get it to be back as good as they can be, and it didn't work. Now you're thinking about, you know, a longer period of time, maybe surgery, and that's why it's very alarming. But I do believe that he was ready because I remember a save in the second game back against the Islanders where he stretched across on Okposo and basically did the split, and everything was fine. Sometimes it's the littlest of movement that triggers a little click in the knee or in the leg, and then you go down, and you could redo that movement 100 times. It just takes once to make you go down.
Marty, it has been a lot of talk, of course, about the goaltending equipment. We had Chris King on last week's show to talk about it. What do you think of all the talk? And, you know, that's, I guess, part A. And part B is, do you think it'll make a difference?
I'll tell you part B right away. You have to trigger specific part of the equipment, but it's not going to make that much of a difference. You can't go with the pads and the catching gloves anymore because those things, especially the pads, they cover low on the ice, about 3 to 4 inches to the bottom of the ice. That's what they cover. The difference between shooting a puck 11-inch high or 12-inch high is really not that big of a difference. So I think when it comes to the blocker glove and pads, they're not going to, you know, change that. I think they have to streamline the body, the gear a little bit, and if they could make something that makes the body, which stops a lot of the pucks now, a little smaller, where the goalies have to make a decision either to bring their arms next to their sides to be blocking or keep them out to make a save, I think you'd see a lot more pucks squeaking through. Now, I do understand where goalies come from. Pucks hurt at times, and you have to protect yourself. I just don't understand why in this day and age, there can't be an equipment company that's going to come out mm-hmm. with gear that is very, very protective, but also slimmer, a bit more fitted to the goalie and that can move. I mean, we can make bulletproof vests. I mean, there should be something out there that would be comparable to that, to the goalie world, and pants as well. And the players are getting in front of pucks, and yeah, some of them are getting hurt, but they're not trained to make saves either. So I do think that there's a way we can streamline the equipment without having to jeopardize the safety as much.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Marty Biron discussing goaltending throughout the NHL. Marty, I'm not sure if you saw yesterday's Rangers-Bruins game, but there was an incident right around the crease between Brad Marchand and Henrik Lundqvist, and then it led to a war of words today between Claude Julien, Bruins head coach, and Alain Vigneault of the Rangers. Did you see that incident? Did you think that Lundqvist, you know, went for a dive, or did you think that
teammate?
I know he's a former teammate, but he's in the media now. He's an impartial analyst.
Yeah, I mean, I understand there was a goal that was scored right 5-0 on Lundqvist, and Marchand skated by and kind of got in the way of Henrik's stick, which he couldn't cover the 5-0 by it. It wasn't in the crease. It wasn't challenged. I thought maybe the Rangers were going to challenge that. I was interested to see what the referees would have called if it had been challenged. That's why I wanted it to be challenged, just to see, okay, let's set the groundwork here as to what the referees think could be interference when it comes to sticks and things like that, and they never did. In my own book, I thought that was going to be a goal because Lundqvist is kind of, his knees are outside of the crease. That space in front of him is as much his as it is Marchand. Now, the flopping and flipping and all of that, I mean, I've been there. I've done it myself, not because I wanted to draw a penalty or I want to draw attention to myself. It's just because sometimes the game happens so fast that a little push and you feel, you know, I'm just going to go down and react in this way. And I love what Vigneault responded to Julien about if he could have Henrik Lundqvist as his son or Brad Marchand. I think we all know which one he'd pick. I thought that was pretty clever. Those two guys know each other. They coached against each other in juniors. I actually had both of those coaches when I played juniors. I played for Claude Julien and Alain Vigneault. So I know them really well, and I just have a chuckle and know that it's all a mind game. It's all a media-driven thing, and that those two are probably not going to waste too much time or energy on that after the game.
Now, Marty, we've talked about some of the top goalies that are very well known, Carey Price, Henrik Lundqvist. I think it'd be hard to say that there are two better goalies than that in the NHL right now. But as far as the league as a whole, and it's at the quarter mark of the season, who are maybe a couple of goalies around the NHL that have surprised you, met your expectations, or haven't met your expectations for either how they've played so well or they've played so poorly? What are some goalies across the league that have really stood out to you so far this season?
I like Braden Holtby. I really like his mm-hmm. game. I actually picked him to possibly win the Vezina this year. I just thought, you go with Price and Lundqvist, it's kind of like going with the easy pick, you know? And I thought, okay, here's a guy, to me, who played unbelievably well for the Washington Capitals last season, played 30-some straight games, was never out, kept his team in, and I think the Washington Capitals are ready to take that step to go to the finals and possibly win a cup. And I think if Holtby can be playing the way he did last year and the way he's played this year, I think he'll be in the conversation that towards the end of the season. So I really like what he's done. I really like what Marc-Andre Fleury's done over the last 2 years. Changed his style a little bit. He's not as out of control as he used to be. What he did with goalie coach Mike Bills in Pittsburgh over the last 2 years have really changed him and given him a chance to succeed, albeit he's older now, so more mature, more experienced. But I do think that's the way he needed to go. Obviously, Martin Jones in San Jose has impressed me very much. You talk about Cam Talbot and Eddie Lack and even Robin Leonard that got traded to Buffalo. All these guys got traded to be number one. And Martin Jones was a hot commodity, and it was kind of a bit of a circus last year when he was traded to two different teams in the 48-hour span or not. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that San Jose is in a great hand with him and with the way they've played. But there's so many good goalies and good stories out there. You look at Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi in Dallas, the way they've been meshing together, they've been able to piggyback one off of one each other. I didn't know if it was going to work, and it seems to work really well for that Dallas team over there. So there's a lot of good stories, but those are my main focus in the first part of the year.
Final question for you, Marty. And, you know, you mentioned Dallas. That was my next question. You played for Lindy Ruff, of course, and you, and Ryan Miller, who's actually been bearing the brunt a little bit of the goaltending equipment issue, but you played with Ryan Miller, and you're in Buffalo. Lindy Ruff was the coach, two goalies there in Dallas. Do you think he's handled it well so far, and are you surprised? I guess you maybe are a little bit surprised at how well it's worked.
I am surprised at how Lindy has handled his goalies. Simple fact is that he was never really good at figuring out what the goalies needed, how to do a rotation. And it's not his fault. When he first started as an assistant coach, he was in Florida with John Van Beesbrook as his number one goaltender, and Beeser pretty much played every game. Then he comes to Buffalo, and he has Dominic Hasek as a goalie, and basically Dom set his own schedule, and it was like, play 39 as much as you can if you want to win. After that, I was there as a number one, and he gave me 72 games my first year as a number one goalie as a 24-year-old, and he never knew how to handle his goalies the proper way. Towards the end, he played Ryan Miller way too much. Mills, mm-hmm. he was just fading away. You know, you could see how skinny he was at the end of the season, and there was nothing left in him. I do believe that he really struggled with that for many, many years. Last year, he did as well. Played Kari Lehtinen way too much, and Lehtinen was not good at all. And now this year, I'm thinking, well, Niemi's in. He's going to play as much as Lindy wants him to play, and no. They pretty much split them down the middle, and I think you have to look at Jim Neal's mm-hmm. over there in Dallas as a general manager that's influenced Lindy a lot and helped him get to a better place with his coaching, and I think that had a lot to do with the way Lindy's handled his goalies. He's not as stressed to send his number one goalie like it's a do-or-die game in November. He's willing to split them up and knowing that in the long run it's going to be better for him, so I'm very impressed with what he's done.
Marty Biron is an analyst for the NHL Network for TSN and for RDS. Marty, always appreciate your time and great insight into the world of goaltending, and I'll let you get back to your Thanksgiving weekend with your family. Always appreciate you joining us on the show.
Finish off those leftovers.
No problem. I know. I got a chocolate pecan pie and a pumpkin trifle, something in the fridge right now. I'm going right at that.
What time should we be over?
You know what? If you get in the car right now, you may get here by maybe noon tomorrow. So we'll figure that out.
Thank you, Marty. Appreciate it.
Have a good one, guys.
You too. Let's head to break. Before we do so, we're going to come back and continue with our evaluation. And then, and we don't do this often on this program, we're going to open up the phone lines. 5 p.m. You can get your dialing fingers ready. We want to know, hear from you, who's matching, who's exceeding, or who's below your expectations at the quarter mark of the Winnipeg Jets season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Picked up in Ottawa, it's a chance, centered out in front, and a shot. Curtis Lazar is absolutely robbed by Hutchinson. Curtis Lazar came in late, took a pass, tried to flip it over. over the shoulder of Hutchinson, who saves the day and makes his finest save of the night and preserves this 2-2 tie with under 2 minutes to go in the third period.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're continuing our look at the Winnipeg Jets, if they've been matching, exceeding, or underachieving based on our expectations thus far this year. We've done the defense, we've done the forwards. We're now going to do the goaltenders, the coaches, management, and special teams. I should point out that this segment brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtor of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100. Let's start with Andre Pavlik. He's, of course, on the Jets, on the injured list for the Winnipeg Jets, going to be out for the next, well, probably at least 6 weeks, give or take, at this point in time. Coming before that, he was 5-6-1 on the year with a 2.82 goals against and a 906 save percentage. Has Andre Pavlik been matching, exceeding, or underachieving based on your expectations?
Well, I'll go first, Drew and Richie. For me, he's been below my expectations. And that's partly to do with the fact the way Andre Pavlik played towards the end of last season, going down the stretch with a couple shutouts and being pretty solid in that first round against the Anaheim Ducks. So to me, the numbers are obviously not part of it, but it's more so the consistency, and he's had some pretty poor games. And that's probably part of the reason why he wasn't being given too many more starts than Michael Hutchinson, because really Paul Maurice was just trying to find a hot goalie, but using the rotation because he knew, especially early in the season, both goalies probably had the same ability to keep the team in the game. But no, it's got to be below for me. And that has probably a lot to do with the road trip, because both goalies struggled. So that road trip, he might be even before they go on that road trip. But I was really expecting one of those two goaltenders to really separate themselves and stand out on that Central Division road trip, and both of them struggled. So I'm probably, you know, foreshadowing Michael Hutchinson is also a minus for me. But Andre Pavlik, I think, is probably, I would say, the bigger minus.
I think he's a zero. I mean, he had the 920 save percentage last year. I wasn't convinced enough after last year. I mean, he was performed well, but I wasn't convinced to be the guy. I think Ezzie and I were doing a show in the middle of the year, middle of summer, Drew. And I mentioned I thought Hellebuyck would get some time, or Hellebuyck and Crombie would get some time this year. I didn't expect it to be this early, but I'm not shocked by that. Has he been absolutely horrendous? No. Has he been great? No. So, I mean, he was pretty good last year, and I think this year he's been kind of reverted back to more of the career figures. Again, it's only 15 games, but he's reverted back more to what he had done before that.
Reminder, we will open up the phone lines on this conversation at 5 o'clock, so you can get your opinions ready. We'll take it to the phones then to talk about which Winnipeg Jets players are matching, exceeding, or underachieving based on your expectations thus far through the quarter mark of the year. Michael Hutchinson, the Jets' backup, then he had an opportunity to take the job. Who knows where that stands now with Connor Hellebuyck's good game yesterday, one game in Minnesota.
Well, I think Connor Hellebuyck's 933 save percentage. He's no Hutchinson, 906. I mean, overall, he played really well last year. Drew faded a bit, and I was wondering if the fading was, are we going to see more of that kind of fading play? He's been within that. Again, I have a zero for him. I don't think he's been awful. He's had some good games. He's had some pretty poor games, and He's in that ballpark of reasonable expectations. Probably a little bit lower than you'd expect, but not enough to make him a minus one, put it that way. I know Ezzie disagrees, though.
Yeah, no, for me, Michael Hutchinson is a minus. And again, this isn't
meaning harsh that, here.
Well, no, this isn't
harsh,
meaning
but fair.
No, I'm a fan of both these goalies, and I think they've played well, but I don't think they've played well enough based on my expectations. I have high expectations based on how they played last year. And the Jets had very solid goaltending last year. And I'm not saying that they haven't had solid goaltending. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they haven't played quite as well. I think they would probably tell you that too. I mean, look at their numbers are nearly identical, Drew. Both of their records are below 500. The save percentage is not where you would like it to be. The goals against, and these are team stats as well. So part of the way the Jets have played defensively has to do with the goaltending, right? Because it's how the guys in front of you, the five guys in front of you, are playing. But, you know, you look at the Nashville game, he was pulled after letting in three goals. I didn't think he was strong in that game. Montreal, he was pulled earlier in November. He didn't have a very strong game. So I think that, you know, Hutchinson, I think he can turn it around, and I think he's still a solid young goalie. I just think the first 24 games here, he's played, 13 or 14 games, whatever it is. I just don't think he has been as good as I expected him to be. That's what I'm saying, because we're basing it on that, right?
You're
so that's
sure?
That's what I would – my opinion is I think, he's left a little bit to be desired, and he can be better. And I think he will be better, by the way. I think if he starts tonight, I wouldn't be surprised if he's really good and has a good game, only lets in, one or two goals versus the Avalanche, because he's shown time and time again that he can get the job done.
Kevin Cheveldayoff, Winnipeg Jets general manager. You know, he's really evaluated, more so during the off season, but, you can see his handiwork, is seen on the ice right now.
I think it's minus one right now, Drew, and again, it's hard to judge a GM on the quarter of the season. But I think the reason I'm saying that is because of the lack of depth up front and the need to run out kind of players that you probably ought to have players that are better than. And so by that, I mean, if you're fine with Thorburn as your fourth line right winger, fine. I don't think Thorburn and Pluso need to be in your lineup on different lines. I think that, maybe you've been hamstrung by the budget a bit, if that's the case, and you spend money to me on a forward rather than Adam Party or something like that when you have other guys like Postma who can play. So I think that lack of depth, and there hasn't even been an injury yet. So, I mean, Patango's down.
Aside from Pavlik, yeah.
Forward injury.
Forward group. Yeah. It's amazing how healthy they are.
So, and you hope that they stay healthy.
Sure.
But the point is, there's been a lack of options, to me, based on the coach's maneuvering of the lines, and you haven't had any injuries yet. That's a minus because you haven't provided enough depth. Yeah, a guy like Lee Stepniak, we mentioned on the show many times in the offseason, take less pressure off the young players, brace yourself for injuries. I think both would have been, ought to have been better addressed, put it that way.
Yeah, I'd say minus for Chevy as well, Drew. And obviously we weren't expecting there to be that many trades earlier in the season. But as Richie said, it's more so what they did in the offseason leading up to the season. We expected the Jets to sign one veteran forward. But, hey, they went younger with Nikolaj Ehlers, Andrew Kopp, and Nick Patan. And unfortunately, Nick Patan wasn't working out, so they think that he'd be better suited to be developed in Manitoba. But that's just based on the quarter mark. I think you're starting to see, as Richie mentioned, some of that lack of depth in certain games when they're not getting scoring from the big line of Ladd, Wheeler, and Little, or getting scoring from that second line, Scheifele, Ehlers, and now Perreault. They've had trouble with that third line. Adam Lowry's not producing, and Burmistrov's not producing. Not to say that these guys won't get it going, but based on the first quarter of the season, and the Jets are out of a playoff spot, and that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, right? The Jets had a really good start to the season, four or five wins, five of the first seven, and they've struggled since then. When you lose eight of your first 10 games, that's almost half of the start of the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to expect there to be some minuses here. And I think the special teams are also a minus. I know we haven't got into that yet, but I think there's a lot of minuses here. I mean, the Jets really have to pick it up here because they're on the outside looking in of a playoff spot.
Let's do Paul Maurice before we do the special teams. Paul Maurice, how would you evaluate the job he's done? Has he matched your expectations? Has he exceeded them?
Well,
or is he below your expectations?
I thought they'd make the playoffs, and they're certainly not out of it by any means yet. Although it's not looking as good as maybe did a little while ago. I'm going to say a minus one only because the team has not played anywhere close to the defense and team defense that they did last year. And maybe he set himself up for expectations because they played better than I thought last year in terms of the team defense, and now they're playing worse based on last year. So I'm going to drop it a little bit, minus one. But again, I don't think you can necessarily judge Maurice without pointing to the fact that we just gave Cheveldayoff minus one for maybe not giving him enough guys to work with.
Yeah, for me, Paul Maurice is even, and I want to go minus, and part of the special teams falls on him. It falls on the entire coaching staff.
But I also think
that, the on-ice performances have a huge part to do with that. It's everything, right? Management, coaching, and the players on the ice. It's a little piece of everything. But to me, the Paul Maurice decisions, I think he's done a nice job over the last couple of weeks changing the lines, getting Stafford up on that second line to get Perreault going there with Scheifele, because Scheifele has been the one consistent on that second line. But I think, you know, having the confidence to put Chris Thorburn on the third line, and he's been pretty well there, even though we might not expect him to stay there. Mm-hmm. I think he's shown that he has the ability to fire up that blender. And he hasn't been afraid to take a Ben Chiarot out of the lineup and put Adam Pardy in. So for me, you know, he's met my expectations, but I definitely think that losing streak, you know, made me think about possibly giving him a minus. But right now, I'll keep it at even.
Quickly, power play and the penalty kill in terms of your expectations.
Well, it's got to be a minus, guys. I mean, their special teams are bottom 10 when you talk about power play and penalty kill. And so the power play has started to get it going. Matthew Perreault has had a couple goals here in the last couple of games, but mm-hmm. they went through a big drought there on the power play. And the penalty kill has been an issue because they've taken so many penalties. Another thing that really the coaching staff has to take responsibility for. So I think it's a minus for me, a big minus for special teams.
You know, I'm inclined to agree that the penalty kill, yeah. I mean, when you're 20 and 25, even if you don't think the power play is going to be that good, it's hard to not give those two a minus.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines, 204-780-1290. We're going to talk. We want to hear from you. Which NHL Jets players are meeting, exceeding, or matching your expectations thus far this season? 204-780-1290. The phone lines are now open. Hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. The phone lines are open, 780-1290. We've been discussing Winnipeg Jets players and if they have been matching, exceeding, or below our expectations thus far through 24 games this year. We ask you the same question as well. Give us a shout, 780-1290, or you can tweet at us at Illegal Curve, and if you want to get in on the conversation that way as well.
Yeah, let us know if you've had an Illegal Curve sandwich and you like it or don't like it. I've had 5 already today, so I'd like to hear if anybody else is munching on that.
Hopefully you make it through the show.
It's always a bit of a crapshoot there. So the lines are open, 780-1290. Jets, month of December coming up here.
What's Twitter say before you get into December?
Oh, good call, Richard. What is Twitter? Well, Twitter's always a bastion of information. Let's see. Chris Merrills says that Brian Little and Blake Wheeler are exceeding his expectations. Anthony Peluso, Andrew Kopp, Dustin Byfuglien, and Toby Enstrom are meeting his expectations, and everyone else is below. So, you know, give us a shout, 780-1290. We want to hear from you who's matching, exceeding, or below expectations thus far this year. Well, let's head to Paul in Westwood. Paul, welcome to the program. Who's matching, exceeding, or below your expectations so far?
Well, below has got to be Trouba. He hasn't done much at all this year. He's really slowed down. Matching, I would have to say the goalies. Hutchinson is matching. Pavlik was above expectations. He was doing well before he got hurt. But to me, the biggest disappointment is Trouba and then Ladd.
And you know, I think that's fair, Paul, in terms of Trouba. Trouba has, to me, since the middle of last season, very close to when Zach Bogosian was traded out of town. I'm not saying there's a correlation between the two, but his play has certainly fallen off since then, and they need to get him back on track. And Andrew Ladd, I think it's something that the team is probably less concerned about than Trouba as a whole. And now, granted, there are contract factors and there's, you know, Trouba's youth that plays into it. But, yeah, and I think when you're building your team around a really solid and mobile defense, and you have some guys who sometimes give it back defensively, like Byfuglien and Enstrom tends to at times, too, you need a guy like Trouba who's supposed to be rock solid on his own end to be able to do that. So I do think that's been a factor for sure.
Paul, really appreciate the call. Thanks for listening to the program. 780-1290. Be like Paul and let us know who's matching, exceeding, or below your expectations of the Winnipeg Jets thus far. You mentioned Andrew Ladd. Does he look injured to you?
No.
No? You think he's healthy?
I mean, maybe there's an injury. I don't know. You know, it's always funny. I always find it funny that we find out about injuries after the fact. And I'm not saying this wasn't a factor, but if the injury was such an issue going into the season, don't you want to lower expectations and say, you know, he's coming off this surgery and he may not perform as well? So it comes up after, I think, to take pressure off the player. I know that there's been some stats saying that guys from these injuries don't perform as well, so I understand that as well. But he hasn't looked injured. He looks like he's skating a little better recently, but I'm not thinking that that's the only reason why he struggled. I'm of the mind that when you have a contract uncertainty and certainly uncertainty at home in terms of where you're going to be living and stuff, that that'll be a factor as well.
I think it's interesting, you know, our last caller, Paul, mentioned Ladd and Trouba. These are two guys, along with Byfuglien and along with Wheeler, who are the emotional leaders of this team. And I think at times, and you can go back to the road trip against the Central Division, they weren't giving the team that emotional boost that they have in the past, whether that's with a big hit or a goal. And I think Jacob Trouba, to me, the big thing that has been lacking is that aggressiveness. And, you know, he's dropped the gloves this season already, and we've seen him have some big hits. He had a big hit yesterday in Minnesota, if you remember that hit. But I think that he's struggling with his confidence. And who knows if that has to do with the fact that he's a pending RFA. But all we know is that we have very high expectations. He's a future franchise defenseman for this team. So we expect him to be having an impact at all ends of the ice.
780-1290 or tweet at us at Illegal Curve. We want to know which NHL Jets players are matching, meeting, or exceeding expectations thus far this year.
I want to talk about the power play. We didn't get enough time before the break. The power play is swinging along here at a 16% clip, 25th overall in the National Hockey League. Last year, they were at a 17.5% clip, and they were 20th in the National Hockey League. So when you evaluate special teams as a whole, maybe you say it's a -1, but how much were the how much really should the Jets' expectations be? As you're talking about a power play, the difference is 1.5%.
Yeah, no, and good teams don't necessarily have good power plays. We've talked about this time and time again. Chicago Blackhawks have had trouble on the power play. If you look at their power play numbers year over year, they've won Stanley Cups with not having the best power play during the regular season. So it's only a part of the game, Drew. But I think especially in certain games where you would like a power play goal to give you momentum in a game, I think it struggled. And especially with a guy like Nikolaj Ehlers in the lineup, you'd expect the Jets to have some more power play goals. And the good news is the last couple of games, the power play started to get good. And you got to give a lot of credit to Matthew Perreault for that as well.
And the PK has been worse. I mean, the PK was in the top half of the league last season. And this season, obviously, it struggled a bit early. But that's a factor. I mean, again, the PK, I think you want to hope for a little more upside. Why? Because it's not necessarily dependent on that top-end skill that you need to make it as good as you want it to be.
780-1290, which Winnipeg Jets players are matching, exceeding, or below your expectations thus far this year? Heading back to Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Cappy D says that this is an easy question. All but Nikolaj Ehlers are below expectations, and Ehlers is above Cappy D's. And don't get him started on rating management. So he isn't happy with the performance of Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff thus far this season, or this offseason, as the case may be.
I think a lot of people are going to be more hopeful and have better grades for guys that they probably... I'm not saying that Ehlers is a plus one as well, but I mean... And I don't disagree with the assessment necessarily, but because I had Cheveldayoff as a -1. But the idea is, you know, you haven't seen a guy a lot, you're going to likely be, he's going to exceed your expectations. And over time, you're going to probably see his faults and you might grow a little bit tired of him.
Michael Young on Twitter. Interesting point. Let's own our part in the first quarter results. He's giving the Jets fans themselves a -1. Nothing creative so far. Hope for improvement in the second quarter. So Jets fans turning on themselves now. You hate to see that happen.
That's a fair point. There haven't been any real creative chance so far.
Those self-deprecating Jets fans. You can't give the Jets fans a minus.
I mean they sell every game, so you get a plus. But
yeah, they
get a plus from True North. But no, I suppose in terms of creativity.
But the Jets fans want their team to be in a playoff spot right now, and right now they're behind that line, below that line. So I think there are a lot of Jets fans that are a little bit disappointed, and also probably would liking to see Ladd signed at this point, would like to see Dustin Byfuglien signed at this point.
Well, I mean, hold on a second. Let's get in. I know we got some callers coming up here, but I want to talk about that for 1 second. Because when we talked about the analysis of the management, we didn't really talk about how that plays a factor in this. So if you want to open that whole can of worms, Ezzy. week.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's true. I mean, we expected some players to be signed at this point, and now we're a couple months into the season, and there's a lot of uncertainty.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Kyle is in East Kildonan. Kyle, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Appreciate you calling in, Kyle.
I remember you from when you were on the old station there at the
Kick FM. River.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've been listening for a long time. Never phoned before.
Thanks a lot, Kyle.
Meeting expectations would be most of the rookies. I really didn't think Patan was going to make the Jets this year, and when he did, I think he got some great experience, but I expected to see him on the moose. I thought Ehlers was going to start hot and then cool off when people had to notice him, and I think that's kind of what's happened, so now he's figuring it out again. And Kopp, I think he actually maybe exceeds expectations. He's been doing awesome. And the only other player that has really been of note, I really thought the Jets were going to struggle with faceoffs this year. That was kind of the only thing Slater brought to the team last year. And I thought that that was going to be somewhere so they'd struggle. And Little has really picked that up. And I don't know, the rest of his game maybe meets expectations, but his face-offs have certainly been a benefit to the Jets, I think.
Kyle,
and I'll leave you guys with that.
Thanks for the call, Kyle, and thanks for the support over the last number of years. Yep. Terrific insight there. Really appreciate that.
Thanks.
And you know, Kyle talks about Little, and we talked a little bit about the face-offs, no pun intended there. Kopp and Little both being able to be over 50% gives you something. And the reason I say that is because one is a left-handed guy and one is a right-handed guy. And the coach, you're going to be stronger on your strong side. The coach is very happy when he's got an option on the left and an option on the right, especially late in the game, both in the offensive and defensive zones, especially with the new rules and the advantage that the offensive player has.
Sure. 780-1290. Phone lines are open. Which Winnipeg Jets players are meeting, exceeding, or below your expectations at the quarter mark?
Not just players, Drew.
Players, management, special teams, coaches, everything. The entire organization's up for evaluation. We have Claude on the line. Claude, welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. I've always been a big fan of your show. For 2-3 years, you don't drink the Kool-Aid. You tell it like it is.
Thanks, Claude.
You guys should have more time on TSN.
Appreciate that, Claude.
You know, when you break down all the teams, oh, look, I'm a Leaf fan, but I'm a realistic Leaf fan, and you guys tell it like it is. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Claude.
And also, season ticket holder for the Jets. Here's a few things that I noticed since watching them there this year again. This is my fifth year watching them in a beautiful MTS Center. Mm-hmm. I just want to say, first of all, if you look at the pieces, you know, for example, our fourth line is terrible. And I think the biggest hole, we lost two good players that I know they're veterans, but they would have helped the younger players right now with Stepniak mm-hmm. on the third or fourth line, and, of course, Frolik. Frolik, I watched him. And the guy, every time he played with somebody, he made that person better. And he... You know, they play chicken with whatever, and they, you know, and Calgary signed him to not a big contract. He got a little more, but I think the Jets could have, if they were really interested in, instead of playing chicken now that they're doing with Ladd and Byfuglien, mm-hmm. they lost a great player because I was really impressed, and he never complained. Yeah. They'd ask him to play with certain players. He never complained. He made them better. It's a class act, but all I want to tell you is I'm glad that I was able to phone in. You guys are a class act, and keep up the good work. I know some of you know you're not drinking the Kool-Aid, and some of the comments you made about the Jets are realistic, because I see things as a Leaf fan, you understand?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you tell it like it is, and I thank you very much for your show. I listen to it all the time, and I appreciate what you're doing. Take care.
Claude, appreciate the call. Thanks very much on that.
Before, and appreciate the kind words, Claude. Claude makes a really good point on Frolik, and he talks about flexibility. And we've got to go to break here, too.
Yeah.
Talks about flexibility. Well, he's absolutely right, because Frolik you could drop last year with Little and Ladd, which they did.
Yeah.
Drop him on the second line. Drop him on the third line. And I think when you see Paul Maurice putting the lines through the blender, he's kind of thinking, I like a guy like Michael Frolik here. It could change the complexion of my roster. I don't really have that, because Stafford, the scorer, he's not going to check. So I can't really put him with the checking line with Lowry, because then he can't score. So I got to put him with a scorer, but then if I put him with a scorer, who am I putting on the other line? And I think they do miss that flexibility.
The phone lines are open, 780-1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, more of your calls, more of your tweets. Which Winnipeg Jets players are matching, exceeding, or below your expectations at the quarter mark of the season? 20 minutes past 5 o'clock. The phone lines are open here. 780-1290. We are asking the question, which Winnipeg Jets players are meeting, exceeding, or below your expectations at the quarter mark of the season? You can also tweet at us at Illegal Curve. We go back to the phone lines. Birds Hill Bill, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
As usual.
Thank you.
I hope we can answer a couple of questions, not really on the topic you're discussing. But what happens, the first question is, what happens over the next month and a half? Both Hellebuck and Hutchison play absolutely lights out, just incredibly. What happens when Pavlik comes back? And my second question is probably a little on the dumb side, but I'll just hang up and listen to your answers.
There's no such thing as a dumb question.
A player for cash. Thanks, guys, and I'll keep listening. Great
Thanks,
show.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the Bye. Phone calls. It's, take the first the first one.
The first one, if Pavlik comes back.
The Jets have three bona fide goaltenders.
Yeah, a couple of things. One possibility is that you carry three goaltenders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the guys that are sitting upstairs, no offense to them, are absolutely paramount to the cause. Like a Peluso couldn't be put down on waivers or whatever it may be. So I think if you absolutely see, now Hellebuck can go down without waivers, so that's a advantage, of course, and that may happen if they need to make it happen. But you can also keep three goaltenders, so those are the possibilities. I can't see them subjecting either of the other guys to waivers, just in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of if you can trade a guy for cash, good question, actually. You can trade a guy for future considerations, which I'm not sure how it works in the cap system. But
the Jets have a bad history of trading players for cash. Of course, Chris Draper was traded to the
Red Wings. I'll look into that, though. That's a good question. That's a good question.
Chris Draper was traded to the Red Wings for $1 back in the day, and we certainly wouldn't want to see that again. You can tweet at us. We want to know which Winnipeg Jets players are meeting, exceeding, or below expectations. Anthony Hayward gives a plus to Wheeler, Little, Ehlers, and Kopp. He gives an even to Bufflin, Shifley, Perreault, Stewart, Enstrom, and Thorburn. Let's head back to the phone lines. We have Ed in St. James. Ed, good evening and welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
Meeting expectations, I think the only two meeting expectations are Wheeler and Little. The rest of them are below expectations, in my opinion.
Why do you say that?
Well, I don't think they're playing as well as they did last year. Shifley started out great. All of a sudden, he's tailed off. So did Eilers. He's tailed off. Mm-hmm. You know, and our defense, I don't know. They're not playing defense. They're playing forward mostly, getting caught up. Guys behind them all the time. In front of the net, they're not taking anybody out. I mean, our goalies are just there at the mercy of the other team's forwards. I mean, it's ridiculous watching them. I was a coach in the community club, mm-hmm. and my players would never do that. They'd take the guy out in front of the net.
There have been at a lot of gaffes defensive coverage, and that was a concern we pointed out coming into the season. Now, some of the guys, you know, have in the past played better defensively and are capable of doing it. And I think last night's game is something that Paul Maurice is going to want to harp on. But yeah, I agree with you. There's been a lot of blown defensive coverages. And I also agree with the point that defensive coverages, as you can touch on this as well, have an effect on goaltending numbers. I mean, that's obvious.
Absolutely. When you make 30 and 40 saves a game and you're saying the goalies are no good.
And the breakaway problem they had. Yeah,
for a caller, I mean, I agree. I think the Jets have been giving up too many shots. Certainly not yesterday afternoon against the Minnesota Wild, but
no,
definitely.
The way they played yesterday is the way they've got to play the rest of the year.
Absolutely.
That's an NHL game.
Right. Ed, really appreciate the call. Thanks
for
listening.
I got one more thing.
Go
quickly.
One more. A shovel day off.
Yeah.
And the signing of Ladd and
Bufflin.
Yeah. I mean, how can we say he's doing a bad job and we don't know the terms that they want, how much money they want, and the length of their contracts? We have no idea.
Well, we never know, Ed. And I
know. So if you're saying they want to say $7 million for 5 or 7 years, I wouldn't sign them. They're not worth it.
Well, then Ed, I think if that's the case, then you have to trade them.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's what's going to happen. And I don't think you'd say it's Sheveldayoff's fault. I mean, because we don't even know what their terms are.
Ed, appreciate the call. Thanks very much for listening.
Thanks for taking my call. Bye now.
780-1290. The phone lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation.
The criticism you can have on that is if you wait long. Now, again, you play like you did yesterday, you keep winning. You're going to put him in a hard position. I said this to Rick, and Rick said this to me. We both talked about it on Wednesday. If the Jets keep winning, that's a way worse situation for Kevin Sheveldayoff to be organizationally, because he doesn't know what, you know, can I go for it or not? If I can't sign him, can I trade these guys and lose the room and lose a spot?
Yeah.
That's a tougher position. So if you couldn't sign him, was this something that you you had to determine at the draft or before that? Because now, as we said, I think we've said it many times in the show, every day that goes by, Jets lose leverage.
Right, and it's about...
Even if Lads perform poorly up to standards, as we talked about.
There's still a good market value.
And part of our evaluation criteria for management is what they did leading up to the season in the offseason, right?
Absolutely.
So it's, did you add enough pieces depth-wise to allow your team to succeed right now? And I think you're seeing that right now, especially with some younger players struggling. The Jets don't have a lot going on in their bottom lines. I mean, sure, you know, Ehlers is there now, and Chris Thorburn's been great over the last week or so on the third line. But I think you've seen a lack of productivity from some players. That's why maybe signing at least Stempniak might have been a good idea.
Brock is on the phone line, 780-1290. Brock, welcome to the program. Who's meeting, exceeding, or below your expectations on the Winnipeg Jets?
I have a question for you guys.
Sure.
Do you think Paul Maurice is going to make any changes to the lines anytime soon?
Appreciate the call, Brock. Thanks for listening. Is Maurice going to change the lines?
I think the third line into Brock's. I think the third line needs to be changed eventually, probably sooner rather than later. And the reason I say that is because I don't think Nikolaj Ehlers can contribute offensively enough playing with the guys that he's playing with, in my opinion.
I would expect Adam Lowry to eventually go back on the third line. And I think you would probably see a Lowry, Burmistrov, Ehlers line again, possibly. Or if not, you would see Stafford go back to the third line. But I think for tonight's game, you probably won't see a lot because they were successful against the Wild.
Yeah.
But I think right now the only certainty is Ladd, Little, Wheeler on the first line. As far as the other three forward lines go, you're going to see a lot of mixing up. But now on the defense, same thing. I mean, when the Jets are winning, they usually stick with the deep pairings, you know, Party and Byfuglien, Stewart and Trouba. But for right now, I don't think there are any lines, like I said, aside from the first line that are set in stone that you're probably going to see for the duration of the season.
And if you don't win, I mean, Brock's question is a good one. If you don't win, then, I mean, they were shuffling the deck a bunch. So if you struggle a bit more, then you're going to change them up a ton. But I think over the long haul, again, it's just you need to play Ehlers with guys who can give him a chance to score. And I know he likes to shoot a lot. Sometimes it's not the most conducive to playing with, but you need to play him with more skill.
Another thing to throw in for Brock, too, I mean, you're probably going to see Joel Armia come into the lineup. I wouldn't expect it to happen within the next couple of games, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see that by the time the calendar year is over.
I mean, on the Armia front, and again, thanks to Brock for the phone call, 780-1290, we want to hear from you which Winnipeg Jets players are exceeding, are below, or are meeting your expectations thus far this season. On the Armia front,
He's been good for the Moose this year.
Yeah, I know.
I've watched Armia play, and sometimes, you know, he leaves a little bit less to be desired. Peter Siamandis, who's covering the Moose for LegalCurve.com this year and doing a great job, by the way, had a nice piece called Who is Joel Armia? And, he had really good things to say about him. He's watched him more. But when I've seen him play, he's been a top offensive player for the Moose. He's a good playmaker, and he even has a little bit of a physical element to his game because he's certainly got the size. So I think he's a guy that Paul Maurice absolutely wants to see sooner rather than later in the lineup.
But it's so bizarre that you call him up. You know, it's not like you're calling him from St. John's where he has to travel to get anywhere.
You're calling him up from down the hall.
Exactly. So why call him up and then just leave him in your press box when you could call him up, you know, 4 hours before? I know they're on the road trip, but from Winnipeg to Denver.
But you have to have him what if you have a late injury?
I know.
Groin in warm-up.
Well, I mean, I get it. Then why aren't you?
What do you want to do? You want to take Evander Kane's helicopter and fly him in whenever they need a roster spot?
No, but I'd want to see him in the lineup if you're going to play him. You know what you have in Anthony Peluso. I think if you're going to have Armia on your NHL roster, you want to see him in game action.
But I mean, it's identity of the line. Like, I understand what you're saying, and in principle, I get it. But if you're going to play Armia on the fourth line, you have to put somebody else on the fourth line who can play plays with him. You drop him into a Peluso spot where you want the line to be physical and all that, it's different than wanting the line to score. So the line needs to take on an identity.
I know. I understand your point. I just want to see, I'd like to see what he has, in terms of game action. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Phone lines are still open. 780-1290, which Winnipeg Jets players are meeting, are exceeding, or are below expectations thus far this season.
Looked into it, the more I found out that there's a big falling out between Mario and Crosby.
Wow.
Now, whether that pushes them to move him at some point, whether he wants to move, that I don't know. Maybe the personnel isn't right.
That was former NHL player Matthew Barnaby earlier this week alleging that there is a significant rift in the organization of the Pittsburgh Penguins, specifically between co-owner Mario Lemieux and all-world player Sidney Crosby. Tremendous, if true. Crosby denied it immediately thereafter, saying that there is no basis, in fact, for the comment from Barnaby. I think we have Sidney Crosby's response to Matthew Barnaby.
I honestly don't even know what to say to that. If people are going to make stuff up, it's totally out of my control. I feel stupid even commenting on it, to be honest with you. It's ridiculous.
So there's Crosby denying the rift between him and Mario Lemieux. Phone lines, we're going to close them temporarily, but you can expect them to reopen in about 15 minutes' time, 780-1290, as we talk about the Winnipeg Jets and the expectations you've had for them this year. Your thoughts on Barnaby's allegation? I mean, you know, you're talking about Lemieux and Crosby. You're talking about two of the best all time in the NHL. It's a pretty big allegation to level without, you know, being certain of your facts.
Yeah, and if there are truth to these allegations, we're certainly not going to be getting it out of Sidney Crosby or Mario Lemieux, right? But Matthew Barnaby obviously opened Pandora's box with this one, right, Drew?
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because Sidney Crosby started to come on offensively, and he was having struggles. Obviously, we talked about that a couple weeks back on the NHL This Week show. But he certainly had some injury problems, mm-hmm. and I think he's had some issues with the coaching over the past couple of years after Dan Bylsma. And to think that there's a rift between Lemieux, and if you remember, when Sidney Crosby came into the NHL in 2005, he lived with Mario Lemieux.
They played together.
And they played together. And obviously, he's been a huge mentor for Sidney Crosby. How could he not be? Mario Lemieux, I would say, after Wayne Gretzky, is the best forward to ever play the game. There's some other good ones in there, too. But, I mean, mm-hmm. certainly one of the best of all time, right, Richie? So, you know, to hear that there might be a rift, I was kind of trying to dissect all the information coming in and make sense of it, Rich, but I tend to believe that if there was an issue, that's not something that would probably affect his play too much. You'd think a guy like Sidney Crosby, who's won a Stanley Cup, he's won two Olympic golds, he's been the Art Ross Trophy winner, the Hart Trophy winner, mm-hmm. a guy of his class and quality, I don't think would let that impact his play on the ice. But there might be more to it. We just really are only starting to get a little bit of the story, and we're probably not going to get all of it because it might be something that these guys would like to keep out of the news, right?
Yeah, I mean, well put. They're not going to say anything. They're going to deny it to the press for sure. Matthew Barnaby is an interesting guy to have the story leaked in that he played the National Hockey League, played for Pittsburgh.
For three seasons.
Yeah, he's played for actually many teams, but and I say that in terms of like kind of like Marty Baron, he'd be connected to a lot of people based mm-hmm. on playing in that many teams.
Sort of
and
best
players.
Known for his time in Buffalo, though, I would suggest.
Yeah, best known for his time in Buffalo, but I think this is not shocking to me. Ownership's looking to sell the team by far as we can tell, hasn't been able to sell the team yet. Crosby is struggling. The ownership has hired general manager, that isn't going to be there long term. They couldn't hire the first few coaches. At some point, Crosby has probably said to Lemieux and ownership, like, what's going on here? And maybe Lemieux was critical of his play. And then I'm not sure precisely what the falling out was over. I think we'll touch on that maybe Thursday with our friend Mike Colligan in Pittsburgh. But it's not a pretty situation. I watched a lot of the Pens game last night. There's not much there right now, guys. I mean, they less than 20 shots on net, I believe they had. They weren't able to generate much offense. You see all the skill on the ice, and there's just not much passion. And Crosby left the game for a bit, and we'll talk. And on a stupid cross check by Dubinsky, who got a game suspension.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, Go ahead.
I was just going to say, what happened, in case you missed it, is Brandon Dubinsky and Sidney Crosby, who have a history together, from Dubinsky originally in New York, of course, with the Rangers, then got traded to Columbus, and those two teams had a good playoff series a couple years ago. Dubinsky, just with a pretty brutal cross-check, just to the back of sort of Crosby's neck, and Crosby fell to the ground, and then, you know, Dubinsky with another cross-check Crosby was lying on the ice. You know, a one-game suspension for Dubinsky for the cross-check, to me, not enough.
Well, I think I would agree with that, Drew, and I think one of the reasons I agree with it, and you don't want to treat players differently. Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
The NFL puts in rules based on Tom Brady missing a year on low tackles. And you have your best player, arguably your best player, not right now, I don't think, but one of your best players in the National Hockey League, certainly the most recognizable player in the National Hockey League, taking a cross-check in the head from a checking center who's able to score a bit of offense. So, like, does anybody in their right mind pay any money to go see Brandon Dubinsky play hockey versus Sidney Crosby? No. And you want to be able to protect your stars. And Crosby's taking a beating for a while. Maybe that's having an effect on him. I don't know. But this kind of stuff, it can't happen. And by the way, where are the teammates there?
Well, I was thinking that as well. But then I thought about it more and said, I know that everybody should jump, but who's really going to jump in there and be an aggressor?
I don't care if you jump in and get your butt kicked. Yeah. It's the idea of jumping in.
You know what it reminded me of? Remember when Ryan Miller was in Buffalo and he got run over against Boston? I think was it Marchand who ran him over? Yeah, I think it was Marchand who ran him over, and Miller was pissed because none of his teammates really came to his defense. And I saw that last night as well, and I said, you know, you're right. They don't have anybody who can really fight on that team or anybody who's especially aggressive. But when Sidney Crosby gets cross-checked twice in the back of the head and he goes to the ice.
And he has concussion problems and he's the most recognizable player in the league, and you're going to give the guy a game?
Well,
why does he care? First of all, Columbus is out of it. It doesn't matter. They're done.
Yeah. I mean, Dubinsky deserved more than the game, but somebody on the Penguins
has to come and
stick him.
It says a lot about both.
Yeah, well, the Pittsburgh Penguins are not the toughest team, but regardless if it's David Perron or Chris Kunitz or whoever, someone stick up for your captain, right? And you're right, it was a dirty play, and Crosby's been struggling, and there's clearly, on a macro level, something else going on with the team as a whole.
Yes, I agree.
So Crosby is just a part of it, but Malkin has been their best player, I would say, this year. But he also went through some struggles. But it's the team as a whole is not playing at the level they expected to be at. Speaking of expectations, this is a team.
Lucic.
It was Lucic, not Marchand. Thank you to Kay Decky on Twitter for clarifying.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that. But this team, I would say, is lacking a bit of team toughness. Mm-hmm. They're lacking a bit of an identity, Richie. That defense isn't as good, especially with Mata out of the lineup. So it's a team, to me, I still have them as a playoff team, but I don't know if they're going to be able to get out of the first round. I think there's other teams, you know, whether it's the Rangers, the Habs, the Capitals, I think that if they face one of those teams in the first round, I don't know if they beat them in a 7-game series.
Well, I don't think they do right now. I don't think so. I honestly don't think so. And I watching that game, they had a little bit of passion, and they got the 1-0 lead late in the game yesterday, and then they blew it. An interesting kind of play in terms of the goalie interference that was reviewed in that game. But overall, I feel like the end of the prime or the primes of the careers of Malkin and Crosby have been lost to an ownership problem in Pittsburgh and a lack of vision. And Ray Shiro did a nice job there. Were there things you want to change? Sure, every GM wants to change certain things that they've done. And he's doing a nice job already building in New Jersey. But if you're going to replace Ray Shiro, then have a plan.
Yeah, well, that's...
Have a plan. Get the Eagles out of the way and have a plan. And the league... I mean, is this what the league's suggestion was on that? Because I know the league's always... You know, every league is always suggesting to make sure that the situation is best it can be for a market and for a prime market and a prime player. But somebody made a mistake here.
I agree with you there, and I think I mentioned this on the show earlier.
We talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, that David Stern, when he was in charge of the NBA, or Adam Silver.
All the commissioners do it, Drew.
Yeah, they make sure that their best players are in marketable.
Toronto Blue Jays, in terms of like the recommendations of the commissioner, have a lot of say.
Yeah, that's right. That's how Mark Shapiro ended up as whatever the president of the Blue Jays right now, or whatever his official title is. Anyways, the Pittsburgh Penguins are a team. You know, and for all the, you know, the controversy swirling there and everything else, it's not like they're performing poorly on the ice.
Well, I mean...
13-8-1. I mean,
yeah,
I mean,
it's expectations, Drew. And as you talked about, can they beat those guys in 7-game series? What are the expectations based on the talent level? Yeah. And the Lemieux-Crosby thing is interesting in that, is it a moot point because Lemieux's trying to sell, so the relationship really doesn't matter? Or Is it not? And is it deeper? I mean,
you would hope.
Is it going to be a trade? Does he want to demand a trade? It's to me, it's all tied to the ownership, which is why I want to have my colleague on next week. It's tied to the ownership because if you're going to sell, what's the matter if there's a rift?
Sure. Well, I mean,
I know he's still an iconic figure.
Yeah, well, that's just it. Like, I mean, even if he sells his stake in the team, are you telling me Mario Lemieux isn't going to care about the Pittsburgh Penguins? It seems so...
Sure, Drew, but the say that he has...
Well, the say will obviously be less, just because, I mean, but if there's a new regime in charge, but I mean...
What a mess, I mean...
Well, you have players who are unhappy.
At least in the NBA, they'll let LeBron James just make all the calls.
Well, they know where their bread's buttered.
Well, I'm talking about the organization itself.
Yeah, well, they know where their bread's buttered. They know it's buttered with LeBron James and David Blatt as the head coach. You know, he's dispensable. Who cares? You don't. But if LeBron's pissed off, then the organization has something to worry about. If David Blatt's pissed off, who cares?
Drew, what's your bread buttered with?
Generally peanut butter.
Okay.
Yeah.
And regular butter.
And some mayo. It's a real plethora of spreads at that point.
Ketchup sandwiches?
No, thank you. Not on the ketchup sandwiches there. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the Winnipeg Jets and expectations. We'll open up the phone lines again if people are interested. Twitter, rapid fire, lots more to come. One segment left. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday evening here on TSN 1290. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Graham Clark is in town. His final shows, 7:45, completely sold out. There are a few tickets available for tonight's 10:30 show. Check it out online, rumorscomedyclub.com. Also, if you're looking for a Christmas party destination and or New Year's Eve upcoming, check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Rapid fire.
Before we begin rapid fire for this week, programming note, Thursday is going to be NHL This Week, a 1 hour show on Thursday from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. leading into NFL coverage here on TSN 1290. So Thursday for NHL This Week and Saturday, 8 a.m. for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thanks to everybody who called in today. We'll go back to the phone lines at another later date and time, but some great calls today. We appreciate that and everything on Twitter as well. Ezzy, you sort of mentioned this earlier in the program when we had Drew Spivak on. According to Slava Malamud, former Nashville Predators player Alex Radulov is interested in leaving the KHL and returning to the NHL when his contract expires at season's end. Given the ugly end to his most recent stint in the NHL, do you expect Radulov to receive another chance to make an NHL team? And if so, which team will it be?
Well, yeah, I mean, he'll probably get it because he has talent. I mean, let's glorify his skills more. Like Burmistrov, and we talk about how good he is. I mean, the guy is a good player. Drew, he's a better player than Burmistrov. He's a scorer. He's not the best player in the world. And, I think he's probably inclined to be a second-line scoring winger. And Colorado seems to make the most sense. Played for WA. They need it. They need help. They need help on the wings. They need help everywhere. But he'd certainly complement a guy like Soderberg, or even if you want to throw Duchesne back up the middle or whatever it may be and play a little bit more of a deeper roster, that certainly would help. But, I mean, I think sometimes we speak about these guys and, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I don't think they're as good as we may think they are.
No, and you're right, though, Rich. Radulov is an incredibly talented player. He's a little bit older now. He's almost 30 years old. But I wouldn't be surprised if a team gives him a chance. And, Drew, you mentioned that Colorado makes a lot of sense because he was coached by Patrick Waugh. But it's as Richie mentioned, bringing in Radulov, are you going to be bringing in a player who's not going to be a positive influence in the dressing room?
No, for sure.
You could probably get him for 1 year, $1 million to $2 million.
How much leverage does he have now?
Right, exactly. And there has been a trend, guys, of more players coming over from Russia, whether that's Viktor Tikhonov coming back to the NHL with the Chicago Blackhawks, along with Artemi Panarin, who's a rookie, obviously, but you saw it with Evgeny Medvedev in Philadelphia. You saw that in Toronto with Leo Komarov coming back from the KHL. So there is a trend trend of players coming back from the KHL to the NHL, whereas you saw players kind of less and less Russian players, but you're starting to see them come back.
It's a different pace, though. I mean, yeah. Remember the Olympics? Kovalchuk wasn't able to keep up.
Well, and Burmistrov also is one of those guys, Olympics, as you mentioned, right? So, I mean, a guy like Radulov, who's got a lot of skill, would be a benefit to many teams. But again, does he have that mental component? Is he going to really be a nice addition to a team, as opposed to just being a guy who comes into the NHL 1 year, 2 years, and then he's back in the KHL 2 years later?
Mm-hmm. Oilers forward Nail Yakupov was injured earlier this week when a linesman, in attempting to brace himself and avoid falling, pulled Yakupov down from behind as they both tumbled to the ice. The linesman was unscathed, but Yakupov is going to be out of the Oilers lineup for 2 to 4 weeks. Where does this rank among the NHL's most bizarre in-game injuries? Or just injuries in general?
It's pretty high up there. I mean, that game was on in one of the TVs here when Rick and I were doing Wednesday's game, and it was, wow.
Yeah.
You can't even predict something like that ever happening. I mean, you feel bad. It's Yakupov. The Oilers are a train wreck again, and the kind of injury that seems to follow that team around. Crazy to think that they're in the Austin Matthews favorites right now. That's the craziest. That's more impossible than that injury happening.
That they'd win the first overall pick again.
Yeah, and Matt McPherson, obviously, it's terrible for him because he doesn't want to see Nail Yakupov
injured. He's the linesman who fell.
Yes, and now they have two first overall picks out of the lineup along with Connor McDavid.
The other one was injured by a referee, right?
Right, and so, I mean, it's unfortunate because Nail Yakupov actually has had a pretty decent start to the season.
If I was Nugent Hopkins, I'd be running away from the goal judge.
They still have another about six first overall picks to go before they're completely decimated out of the Oilers lineup. Moving to Philadelphia, in an effort to balance out the team's scoring, Flyers head coach Dave Hakstol recently decided to split up Claude Giroux and Jakub Voracek. Yet, according to TSN's Travis Yost, the data does not support this as being a wise decision. Are the Flyers better off with a dynamic line featuring Giroux and Voracek, or does spreading out the offense among more forward lines make the most sense for the Philadelphia Flyers?
Well, I think you try to spread out the offense while it's struggling, and then once you're starting to have more success, then you go back to putting Giroux and Voracek together. And by the way, the Flyers have just won back-to-back games. They won today against the Rangers, and they won yesterday against the Predators, so they've started to play a little bit better. They're still outside of a playoff spot right now, Richie, but you know, you look at Perry and Getzlaff, you look at Ladd, Little, Wheeler, you usually see these players together, Carter and Toffoli in L.A. You see these guys, you know, on different lines, but then when the team starts to play a little bit better, they always put those guys right back.
That's right.
So I wouldn't be expecting Giroux and Voracek to be separated that long.
And they play together on the power play. And the Flyers played a good game today, actually. I watched some of that game and able to beat the Rangers 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to light a fire, and I see, okay, they produced a lot of chances and such when they were together, just can't score. The coach has a bigger picture to deal with, and he's trying to spark things.
The Flyers had been averaging less than 2 goals a game by scoring three today.
Right?
It's a veritable orgy of goals for the Philadelphia Flyers. John Collins, the NHL's chief operating officer, has resigned. He has been praised for getting the NHL's current national TV deals in both the United States and Canada signed, and is credited with being the architect behind the annual Winter Classic. Do you think that Collins deserves as much credit as is being handed out to him around the hockey world?
Well, I don't know enough about John Collins. I mean, he's obviously held in high regard. The one thing I would take issue with that he did, not to say that he's not pretty business savvy, and apparently he's going to take a job, if it's been released yet where he's going, but apparently it's a very appealing opportunity. But I would say this. I would say that I have an issue with the fact that the NHL locked into a U.S. deal and Canadian deal with one broadcaster. I feel like the public is better served with competition and having multiple broadcasters. So I think that was a poor decision on his and the NHL's part. But aside from that, seems to have been held in very high regard, and if he makes the owners money, he's going to be their favorite son.
Right, and as you mentioned, the main his main job was to grow league revenues, and he did that up to $4 billion now, and he was a huge part of the Stadium Series, drew the Winter Classic I know he was heavily involved with that. And as Rich mentioned, he has a good reputation and did a lot of really good things for the NHL. So clearly, I mean, they're going to have to find someone now that he's resigned. But I think absolutely it's going to be he's going to leave a bit of a void. He's done a lot of really good things for the NHL. The NHL is in a lot better position than they were, say, 10 years ago.
Jake Walman is a draft pick of the St. Louis Blues who currently plays for Providence in the NCAA. He has both dual Canadian and American citizenship and has passports issued by both countries. Sought after by both countries for the World Junior Hockey Championship, he elected to attend the Team USA orientation camp as he felt his chances of making Team USA were better than making Team Canada.
Sounds like Brett Hull to me.
Recently, the IIHF denied his bid to play for the United States because of a technicality. By all accounts, he is good enough to garner an invite to the Team Canada training camp. If you're Team Canada and Walman previously chose the United States, would you overlook that snub and invite him to try and make your team at the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championship?
It's a really tough one. You know, he's a kid, and if I'm a Canadian guy, I think he made a mistake. I'd give him a chance, but not another one.
Yeah, I think if he's shown that he wants to play for Team Canada, I think the fact that he also expressed interest in playing for the U.S., that shouldn't be something preventing him. And at the end of the day, if he earns his spot on the team, that's what's the most important. And again, you know, it's a situation that you don't see very often. Richie mentioned Brett Hull, Adam Deadmarsh was another guy.
Two guys who are an instrumental part
Tyler
of Game 3
too,
of the World Cup.
You have a lot.
Tyler Myers was born in the U.S. but played for Canada.
Yeah, born in Texas but raised in Calgary.
Yeah.
So.
A little bit different, but
yeah, I understand
citizen,
what you're saying there.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, if he wants to play,
Peter Nedved did the old.
Anybody that wants
too.
To put the Maple Leaf on, I mean,
you're okay
it's okay in my books.
Last one, last night in Florida, the Islanders and Panthers went to a shootout, in which the first nine shooters scored. Eventually, the Panthers won the shootout 5-4.
Pretty awesome.
As the Islanders, I think it was Tavares actually. No, Tavares scored, but
Tavares scored and the Panthers won, Drew. That would be really weird.
No, Tavares. I was trying to remember the Islanders player that didn't score is what I was trying to do there. But anyways, first nine shooters scoring in the shootout. How bizarre is that in terms of it? Is that good shooting or bad goaltending in a shootout?
Probably a bit of both, but. I like that. You know, I don't like the shootout, but I like to see goals because the goaltenders dominate the shootout. Probably more than people expected when it started. The goaltenders have absolutely dominated the shootout.
Yeah, you obviously don't see that very often, and the goalies were probably not too happy after that that extra shootout round. But you know how I feel about the shootout, Drew. So, I mean, I would hope that the shootout wasn't in the NHL anymore. So I don't really watch the shootouts very often.
That's it for this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Drew Spivak of ESPNDenver.com and Marty Biron of TSN, RDS, and the NHL Network. In case you missed any of the show, it'll be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Riverview Health Center Foundation, Cycle on Life, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Hustler and Lawless here on TSN 1290.